Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Peter McConnell, and I am just so looking forward to finally having a chance to talk with you. It's been years and years, and you've been on my radar for a long time, so this will be really fun.
Well, likewise, and it's my great pleasure, Kate.
You know, your music for those LucasArts games was really like the soundtrack for my son's childhood, because I think we had just about every single one of them, and the music was just so wonderful and really memorable. And, you know, obviously, you've moved on since then, and the latest thing that we're going to be talking about is your music for Plants vs. Zombies, The Battle for Neighborville. So I hope that the music was as much fun to write as it was to listen to.
It was fantastically fun to write and a great bunch of folks to work. And I've been working on the Plants vs. Zombies franchise for some years. And this is a really fun incarnation.
Well, what is it about Plants vs. Zombies that, you know, what is it about that world or working with the devs at PopCap and EA that keeps it fun for you? Because this is like the fourth title that you've done the soundtrack for.
Yeah, you know, I started out on PVZ2, and it was a good long time ago. Actually, I don't remember the year now. I guess I probably should have checked that out. But I was first brought in on PVZ2 to sort of carry on the torch that was so wonderfully lit, if I can use it. But by Lars Shigihara, who's I'm a huge fan of, and it started out with the PVZ2, which is essentially, you know, a very pretty much the same original Plants vs. Zombies game in terms of it being very small in scope and charming. And so I really, you know, tried to carry on that mantle with great respect to Lara's pretty much impeccable taste as a musician. And obviously I had her themes to work with. And that was Guy Whitmore was the fellow at PopCat who brought me in. And Guy and I go back. He's a tremendously talented musician and producer, and especially when it comes to sort of interactive, paying attention to how the sort of interactive music experience is for game players. He's really one of the, you know, elder statesmen, if you will, of that sort of tradition that we also were part of back in the LucasArts days. I used to work for LucasArts Games back in the days. And so Guy brought me in, and I was essentially bringing my sort of perspective to Laura's world. And it was tricky because she has a wonderfully lo-fi aesthetic. And it's kind of hard to describe here, but I actually got off on the wrong foot early on because I tried to make it sound too big.
Oh, wow.
And you know, I just used to using my good samples and so on, and we got to a point about a third way through the project where I was listening to the tracks, and I remember sending Guy an email saying, you know, I think maybe my stuff sounds too serious. And what I actually did was went back and replaced some of my sort of Hollywoodish samples with more humble lo-fi versions of those sounds, and really tried to keep it put a lighter touch, just out of respect to the tradition. And that was kind of a big moment for me, because how to handle that world is it's an artistic challenge. Less is more, let's put it that way. So when other, you know, after PVZ2, which had several incarnations and sort of overlapped with Garden Warfare, that somewhat informed my approach to Garden Warfare, but with Garden Warfare, it did have to get a little bit bigger because it's a different kind of a game. It's a first person shooter.
Yeah.
And there are certain expectations of sort of epicness, right? But I always tried to keep, you know, tongue firmly in cheek, and, you know, the sort of silly sense of epic, I think, is what everybody's going for with Garden Warfare. So that's kind of guided me. It's kind of like I look back to the PVZ2 aesthetic. But, you know, it's sort of like turning a one-dimensional or two-dimensional game into a three-dimensional game. You have to do the same thing with the music.
Well, what I've always loved about the game, starting with the very first one, is, yeah, they don't take themselves seriously in any way. And
right.
So that right there, I think unlocking that whole characteristic of your music must have made things a whole lot easier to kind of move forward and get the right style.
Absolutely. there are certain, you know, when it gets down to synth sounds, I basically developed a palette with Garden Warfare 1 that was, again, sort of an homage to the sort of original PVZ world, but with the addition of a live instrument, which was my electric guitar. I've always put some live element into the Garden Warfare soundtracks, because it has to do with that thing, that difference between two and three dimensions, I guess you might say.
Battle for Neighborville is like PVC cranked up to 11, really. I mean, the battles now are just like so epic, and the brawls are just incredible. And yet you found a way to use acoustic instruments and some, you know, really pretty down-to-earth acoustic instruments too, like this 1928 Gibson banjo. I would love to hear the story of that banjo.
Well, I'm a banjo player. Banjo's actually one of the first instruments I really fell in love with. I grew up playing the violin, and I think in the beginning it was because it was the 1970s and guitars were still a little bit frowned upon in some circles. I picked up the violin because it looked like a guitar. And actually, you know, it is, at the end of the day, the violin is in fact my first love, but it was a bumpy ride early on. And a friend of mine, when I was about 13, came over the friend, I was living in Kansas at the time. And my friend came over the fence with a 5-string banjo. And I didn't even know he played an instrument, and he started playing it for him. I was like, my gosh, what in the world is that? I need to learn how to do that. And it turned out that my grandfather actually had one from the early 1900s that he sent to me. And I learned to play on that instrument. And if you look in the movie Deliverance, that particular instrument looks an awful lot like the one that I have. It's probably a Chicago, made in Chicago, but that's a small detail. The point is, I really got into it's the first instrument that I really started playing a lot, sometimes 3 hours a day. I'd play it till my fingers bled. And as I like to tell my kids when I ask them to practice. And so I got really into it. And I'm a huge fan of Earl Scruggs, of course. And this was also about the time that the movie Deliverance came out. And so 5-string banjos were a huge craze in pop culture right at the time as well. So anyway, fast forward, and I, you know, later on, I bought a nicer banjo, more of a bluegrass instrument, and just kind of became part of my world in high school and college, and less so as a young man playing rock and roll, but I never, you know, let go of the instrument. Anyway, so last year, I guess it would have been, I was at a local folk music store called Amazing Grace in Marin, and the fellow there, John, he has a really fine selection of old instruments. And there were some nice ones on the wall. And this one kind of jumped out at me and was like, oh my goodness, that's an old Gibson Mastertone from the 20s. That's like it's the instrument I always wanted to have when I was a kid. And it's like the one Earl Scruggs played and of that sort of era and that kind of style. It's a special kind of banjo called an arch top. Anyway, there are a lot of, I suppose I can go into a bunch of geeky details. The point is this thing was it's from 1928. It's a conversion from a tenor banjo. It's absolutely gorgeously adorned and it sounds like heaven. And, you know, and it was very expensive.
Well, you got to pay for quality, I guess.
Yeah. But I justify, I said, there's a cheese mine level in Plants vs. Zombies. And I was going to do a banjo track for that. So I guess I better get this.
Yeah. I have to. Oh, sure. Why not?
So I got it, and it really the thing just plays itself. So it really was made those tracks just a joy to put down.
Those tracks are just remarkable. And what I love about that sound is, yeah, you're right. It's got this kind of magical golden tone that modern banjos just don't have. It doesn't have that hard edge that modern banjos have.
No, it's like angels ringing bells, this thing. It's really, you open up the case and it starts singing. It's really something. Yeah, I don't usually, other than my daughter's violin, I don't usually fork out a lot of money for instruments. Actually, I might be kind of lying about that. But anyway, this was a splurge, and I'm glad I did it. And I'm very happy with the tracks that we were able to do, you know, for Garden Warfare 3 as a result. I also, by the way, there's some slide guitar, which is that's a steel, that's a Gretsch steel guitar, sort of like a National Steel Body guitar. It's got a little bit of a different tone, but it's a resonator guitar for folks out there who are into folk instruments and sort of the blues. And those sort of slidey sounds in Dreadwood are that instrument as well. Kind of psyched to, you know, put a little roots element in Neighborville, because, you know, Neighborville has this it looks to me a little bit like Vancouver. This is probably not a coincidence. And, you know, of course, Vancouver is a city, but it's also surrounded by beautiful countryside. And so that element, I thought, was appropriate for the Neighborville scene.
Well, I'm curious, you know, obviously, you know, I love the sound of these and they add so much to the soundtrack, but I'm wondering if it was a hard sell with the devs at PopCap and EA when you told them you wanted to use this 1928 banjo and the slide guitar.
Far from a hard sell. It was definitely, I would say it was music to their ears, especially if, so the guy I was working with for Garden Warfare 3 was Ted Conley, who's a music producer at EA and EA PopCap in Vancouver. And he has a great appreciation for folk traditions, and pretty much any time I would refer to one, he had quite an ear for exactly what that reference was and was very enthusiastic about incorporating that into the PVZ Garden Warfare world. And, you know, like part of doing something that's entertaining for people is there's always going to be, if you're doing it right, I feel there's got to be a certain amount of depth to it. And pop culture is so apparently shallow. You know, there's a sound that someone did, and the next day someone else is doing that same sound, to the point where, you know, in pop music these days, and I'm sorry if I sound like an old fashioned get off my lawn type, but you know what? They really do all sound the same. Okay. They're just like, they're using the same chord progression. I can't believe they aren't just suing each other every day. But I digress. When any kind of pop art form gets interesting, it's got some kind of reference there that's not obvious. It's got a little depth to it. It's like if you go back to the old Bugs Bunny cartoons, all the Western culture references in there are just hilarious, right?
Oh yeah.
And you know, doing Wagner and Rossini and parodying those things in a way that's, you know, talking up to your audience as opposed to talking down to your audience. And so the opportunity to throw something which is, you know, got a certain amount of a style of music that has real sort of folk roots and goes back at least to the 1930s, if not the Civil War, and you're being light with it. So it's sort of like, you don't have to get the joke, but somehow, you know, there's something going on. That's the best way I can describe it. So there was no tough sell at all. It was like, yeah, let's go for it. I mean, you know, not, if you want to get technical about it, not a lot of bluegrass gets played in mines in Nevada, but hey.
It could.
They were very open to that. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet. You know, that actually, I wanted to circle back just for a second, because we've been talking about, you know, how unserious the game is. I mean, it's pretty downright wacky, and it doesn't take itself seriously at all. But is there a point where the music almost has to play the straight man in a way, so that you don't like really go over the top or kind of, I don't know, step on the humor of the game?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You don't want to be, there really are two kinds of approaches to doing funny music, and I really, that's like my favorite thing to do, is music that's got some element of humor in it. And one is to just go over the top and be, you know, like Carl Stalling with the Looney Tunes, you're basically scoring everything on the nose and turning it up to 10. But the other way to do it, which can be funnier sometimes, is to go with the sort of alleged emotion of the scene, if you will, to be completely serious about the drama, even though the drama is essentially silly. And it can be much funnier if you, that's something that Alf Clausen does in The Simpsons, I think, from time to time, where he'll go, it's not all, the music isn't always slapstick match of what's going on. It's sort of like like sort of faux serious sometimes, and that can be funnier. So yeah, absolutely. I wish I could think of an example. Probably, you know, okay, in the cheese mines. I actually said serious, and then I said the word cheese mines. In the cheese mines, the reference that I was given by Ted Connolly was the soundtrack to the 1960, I think it is 1967, I'm not seeing it in front of me, but the classic sort of Technicolor version of H.G. Wells' Time Machine.
Wow.
If you've ever seen that movie. That's a fantastic movie, right? And I'm sorry, I wish I could say the actors right now, and I can't think of them on top of my head, but incredible score, very, you know, really, it's really one of the great special effects movies of its day. It's up there with the Harryhausen films, you know, and a real sort of cultural achievement. And H.G. Wells is really kind of bleak. View of the future and human nature and so on is on full display. And the music for when the hero first goes down into the mines where the Morlocks are and sees the full horror of what's going on beneath the sort of idyllic landscape that's above. That music is what was the reference for the cheese plants.
Wow.
And when you're in the cheese mines and you fight like the bats and things and the giant monster that comes out of the cheese. All that music is done in full seriousness of the danger of the situation. I think that's what makes it kind of funny.
Well, yeah, for sure. It must have been just really fun to have all these different areas to score too, because they're all just so different. And so I would imagine that, you know, if you got kind of stuck in one area, you could just work on something else, and that might have helped with like writer's block or just giving you fresh ideas.
You know, I better knock on wood while I say this. I think I've had a problem with writer's block maybe once in my career.
Wow.
And it only probably lasted for about an hour and a half. and that's not, I don't want to sound like, you know, that's the way it works for me. I think the reason that it works that way is that I learned all sort of the wrong way to do things when I was younger. In college, for example, I was a terrible, terrible, terrible procrastinator. And I got, you know, really good at like, you know, growing enough stubble so that when I asked for the extension on the term paper, I looked pathetic enough, you know, that kind of thing. And the thing is that those are really good life skills. you know, looking pathetic and asking for mercy are really important skills to have. But another thing that was sort of part and parcel of that was, I would have some piece of music to write, and I would find that I couldn't do that unless I had a clean room. So I'd get all my albums in order, and I'd clean up my socks or whatever, and everything would be really pretty neat. And the amazing thing about that is then one thing leads to the next, and pretty soon 8 hours have gone by, and you have a really great looking room, but you got not a note written, right? And so so I guess that's kind of a long-winded way of saying I've learned from the days when it didn't matter so much. I learned to feel when, or to make room for the sounds to come into my head. And that is something that there's still a certain amount of procrastination that happens. I just went through a really a professional level of procrastinating, as I like to say, the last couple of weeks, because, you know, we've all gone through this big change in terms of sheltering in place and that sort of thing. And that has implications for my family, not just me. My life doesn't change that much. I'm already a shelter in place, basically. but the rest of the family was an adjustment. So I went through this period of, you know, making the studio really clean and then making the house really cool and all, you know, all these things. But once all that, once I get that sort of out of my system, and then the fear of God is in me because the deadline is looming, I just sit down and I start at the beginning and I end at the end.
Wow. You make it sound so straightforward. It's so simple.
But you know, fear is a great motivator though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, for sure.
You know, and just a simple, you know, when you're working, just going, you know, is this, you know, am I laughing yet, or am I crying yet, or am I feeling the danger yet? Just things like that, and just changing it until that requirement is met is part of the process. But yeah, and I you know, having the different, back to your original question, which was, you know, having all these different worlds, did that make it easier? And in terms of when writer's block might arise, it certainly makes it easier, partly since I have kind of a short attention span. It makes it easier, of course, to have something new to do every day. That's really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think the answer is yes.
What kind of material did you get from the devs at PopCap? Did they send you like playthroughs or concept art, or did you have to go up there and playtest it yourself?
So, yes, pretty much yes to all those. I went beginning of last year. I went up to visit them, and we sat down and really sort of, it was more about meeting the team and sort of just understanding how things were working and in the whole audio department. That was really helpful for me. And that was something that was organized by Ted Connolly, who was the lead, the audio lead on Garden Warfare 3. And, you know, meeting some of the designers and getting a sense of what they were looking for in terms of the score. I am very much about, you know, personal connections. And if I understand what a project wants, not just sort of technically what they want, but kind of what motivates them as people and artists, that helps me a lot. So we had a day of just playing through the game and talking about the musical approach and what kind of silliness we were going for. And that was very helpful. And then beyond that, it's mostly playthrough videos is the way we work. And there's just nothing like actually seeing it happen. It's a little too cumbersome to actually have an operating version of the game on a remote situation that can get updated in time. So I don't typically have a game to work with when I'm scoring. It's mostly QuickTime movies. It's kind of like the lingua franca of the realm. And so I'm watching a lot of QuickTime movies, and I'm getting a pretty good, for me, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and just a very short video of gameplay can speak volumes. So that's pretty much what I'm, I'll seize that, I'll just get that picture in my mind, I'll throw it up on the, I have a big screen above my two sort of working screens, throw it up on the big screen and write music to it.
Wow. Well, so how does it change? You're watching a moment in time, like a vertical slice of the game. And so what are sort of the things that you have to think about, knowing that it might take a player longer to, decide which plants to choose and how to get through that particular skirmish? I mean, is that a challenge, having only seen like one playthrough?
Not really. I mean, well, part of it is, I have been doing it for a while.
Well, yeah, I know that.
So you get to know where all the towels are in the locker room, as it were. And where all the gopher holes are on the field. But there's also, I also have the great good fortune of working with, real pros who are going to take my music and, when I deliver it, I'm not just delivering a piece of music. I'm delivering a bunch of tracks that can be mixed. And that gives people like Ted Connolly or Eric Paul, who I'm working with now on some Garden Warfare stuff. It gives them lots of flexibility to make it work in the game. And it really, I've done this all different, I've programmed the music myself, I've done it all different ways, where it's just you're tossing it over the fence and whatever they do with it, or in the other extreme, you're actually doing the code that implements everything, every sort of move that the music makes. And for me, I really appreciate working with folks who I just know are going to do something musical with the music.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's not just that, scoring implementing music in a game is very different from cutting it into a film. Unless you're actually working scoring a cutscene, then it's pretty much the same thing. But in the actual gameplay, implementing music in a game is itself, in some cases, an act of composition. So that, to me, I get a sense of how that's going down on the other side of the fence, as it were, because typically I do work out of house, right? But having been raised in-house at LucasArts, I know all the various issues that an audio team deals with, and I'm sensitive to that, and I try to give them material that is going to help them do their job the best they can do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's so important, because you don't want the music to fight with all of the sounds in the game, especially, well, because so many of the things, everything makes a noise in PVZ. And so that must have been, I don't know, kind of a fun challenge to work out with the audio director of how to get your music to play nicely with all of the sounds.
For me, it's more about the drama or the emotion, even if it's the emotion of a pickle. Obviously, music needs to work with the sound score, with the sound effects, with the sound design. And sometimes it's something that you're pretty involved in, and sometimes it's something that you're not that much involved in. But again, it's like you got to trust that the folks you're working with are going to be doing something appropriate with it all. And also, I do get not just playthroughs of before I score, but often after I score a scene or a playthrough situation. And that can be very instructive, because you'll be like, oh man, well, that ain't working. that it's one couple beats per minute too slow or too fast, or or that one instrument is too obnoxious or not obnoxious enough. So as Bob Dylan once said, I can't really tell you much about how the process works, but I have a handle on it when I'm doing it.
Well, you know, you mentioned that pop music, or the music that you put in games, should have some cultural weight and cultural value. And one of the tracks that you sent me that I really, really love is the Pete Seeger-esque "Where Have All the Plants Gone?"
Oh, yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah. I was told that was good for some real chuckles in the audio department. Yeah, that was, it's actually not, it is called "Where Have All the Plants Gone?" But it's really a parody of a genre, which is near a genre that I grew up with and is near and dear to my heart, which is the earnest folk song.
Oh, yeah.
But the reference was, I can't remember her name right now. I think a Brazilian folk singer, but I was certainly thinking of Joan Baez, who's amazing and lives around here, by the way. And then that's me singing. My wife gets a little worried when I do those, when I sing in drag, as it were.
Well, that's why it reminded me of Pete Seeger, because he did that funny goofing off suite. And he was singing in a kind of a falsetto too, and that's
sure, yeah. He's a well. There's no other like him.
Yeah, so you can tell her there's a precedent, and so you know.
yeah, and it's all done with love.
Right, exactly.
the folk song that was a special request at the end of the project.
It's funny and adorable, and it just it works really, really well.
So. Thank you.
Well, you've got some kind of classic synth sounds in there too, and it's really amazing how you blended them all. And I'm wondering if any of them are vintage synths, because they sound like they could be.
They're not. They're all emulations. I do have some problem about classic gear is that it does tend to get broken. And I did cut my teeth when I studied music at Harvard with this with Yvonne Shrepnin, who was a electronic music composer, amazing teacher, and he's no longer with us. He was an amazing electronic music composer, and his brother Serge makes modular synthesizers. And so I, you know, learned, sort of grew up, as it were, learning to program a Buchla and a Serge synthesizer, and so I have that sort of feel, but it's not, you know, I don't actually own any functioning synths from that era. So I have to just, you know, rely on my taste and memory in terms of finding the right plugins to sort of emulate that. So yeah, I wish I could say, yeah, that's it. That really is a Moog, whatever, but it's not. And boy, those things are expensive. Boy, you think a 5-string banjo is expensive? Jeez.
Oh, Christ. And they're hard to find too.
Yeah.
what's cool about having the synths and those sounds in there is that it kind of really reinforces that, yeah, this is science fiction. I mean, there are zombies, and so.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you absolutely, and that sort of goes to two things. One is kind of the garden warfare itself was sort of, the first garden warfare was very consciously 80s. And when I was studying electronic music, it was the 80s, you know, so a lot of those sounds are kind of like sort of old familiar friends to me. And then there's also the homage again to Laura Shigihara's sort of K-pop synthesizer sounds in the original score, which are pretty, iconic at this point for me. So that's sort of where that comes from.
Yeah. Well, wow. We've covered a lot, but is there anything I didn't get around to that you'd like people to know about the soundtrack?
Well, we talked about the five-string banjo, and I don't get a chance to throw a five-string banjo into a game, so I think it's worth checking out just for that.
Yeah, it really makes it unique, and I know that's a goal of, every composer I talk to is to make a soundtrack with a unique sound, and so you've totally done that, and it's awesome.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, and Peter, it's been so much fun to talk with you. So thanks for your time.
Well, thank you, Kate. I really appreciate it. It's been a great pleasure.